guessing 329 is going to be your invitation song. Good evening. Let's see. I guess that's on. Okay. Good evening. It's good to see everyone here this evening. As you can see, I'm not Don McLean, and I will try not to take as much of your time as Don sometimes does, because I don't take it up quite as well. So, we read, and we're going to look at it again this We read just a moment ago from the book of Proverbs, and we're going to come back to the book of Proverbs in a few minutes here. But if you would turn with me to 1 Corinthians 15 for a moment, please. And Paul here in 1 Corinthians 15, in the broader context, is dealing with those who were denying or questioning the resurrection from the dead. But speaking about those people, in verse 33, he says, Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Awake to righteousness and do not sin, for some do not have the knowledge of God. I speak this to your shame. Some of the translations render that evil companionships corrupt good morals, which may give a little bit clearer meaning there as to what Paul is talking about. But as most of you know, I teach high school, and you get a lot of observations about human behavior there as you're dealing with kids day by day who act in ways that they might not act if their parents were there to watch them, or if they, you know, somebody that they recognize as being a rightful authority over them. I know Ashton never behaved at high school the same way he did in front of his mom. At least I hope not. You see a lot of behavior, a lot of things go on in a school that, and especially I teach in a public school, that you would not normally see kids do in front of their parents. And occasionally you have to call the parent in, or the parents, and you get mom or dad or mom and dad sitting in there, and you tell them, okay, look, this is what's going on, and we're going to have to do something about it. And they begin, oh, well, I know. He just, or she just fell in with the wrong crowd. And this is what, you know, I don't know how many times you'll hear that. He or she just, this one, they just fell in with the wrong crowd. And there's about two or three things that run through my mind every time I hear that. And the first thing I normally think of, you know, depending on which student's parent it is like, they didn't fall in with the wrong crowd. They are the wrong crowd. then, you know, my next thought is, okay, if you knew that they were falling in with the wrong crowd and you're their parent, what did you do about it? Why do you allow them to associate with this crowd? Because just about every time I have to call a parent in and talk to them about their kids being involved in something they really don't need to be involved in, and they're involved in it with other kids, the parents already know that they're running around with a bad crowd, and they know it, and they let them do it. And it's always, you know, surprising to me that they know what they're up to. And it's not really a secret, but they just kind of turn a blind eye and pretend that it's not going on. And it's believe me, if I have this kid for 1 or 2 hours a day at tops, and you've had him for 15 or 16 years, I have a hard time believing that you don't know as much about what they're up to as I do. And if you don't, then, you know, all I can tell them is, well, you need to get on the ball a little bit more and keep an eye on them. But there's no excuse for, you know, parents who have had them for 15 to 16 years not knowing as much about what they're up to as a teacher as them for maybe an hour or two a day, depending on how many of my classes they have. And this is one of the things you see that always, well, it's, they fell in with a bad crowd. It's like, yes, they often do fall in with a bad crowd. But why are they running with that bad crowd to begin with? What reason do they have for being with that bad crowd to begin with? And contrary to what they generally want to tell me, there are three reasons that their kids run with a bad crowd. Turn to 1 John chapter 2 for a moment, please. And in case you haven't guessed already, I'm going to apply this to all of us. Why do people in general associate with those they know are going to be a bad influence? But it's, and of course, this isn't a special temptation for younger people, but it can be for adults as well. Why do they associate with people they know are going to be a bad influence? 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. One thing I noticed from my classroom, and if you've been around kids, if you've taught schools, and once again, maybe especially in a public school setting, but not just there, the kids who are apt to be in trouble and apt to do things that they know they shouldn't, and the ones who are not, they tend to sort themselves out into separate groups. And the kids who are apt to get into trouble and apt to be involved in things that they know they shouldn't be involved in, they don't end up with the group of peers that they end up with by accident. They find other people who have the same interests, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. Let me explain what I'm talking about. I've dealt with, at times in public school, situations with kids who want to be involved with or claim to be involved with or claim representation of. And I don't know how from they're telling the truth and how from they're putting it on, but it doesn't really matter to me one way or the other, that they claim they want to be involved with a gang. And you can pick any of the gangs that are notorious around this area or nationwide. You'll find one or two kids always, and they'll start being a little group of them, who want to claim, well, I'm affiliated with this gang, that gang, or the other gang. And they'll try and wear certain clothes or act in certain ways or do all the things that are supposed to be involved with this. And if you take notes on what they're up to and observe, what you'll see over time is there are some reasons they do this. Now, the reason for the ones that I've seen, your experience may be different, but the ones I've seen, it's not because of poverty. In fact, most of them have more money than I do. I had one of the young men, he came up, he was in my classroom. Oh, and by the way, it's not because of race either. I've had more white kids doing this than I have any others. I had one young man come up to me, and he was in my classroom, and he was claiming affiliation with some gang or the other. And his sneakers that he was wearing, he was showing off to everybody, he paid $2,200 for online. Now, I say he paid, I mean, of course, his dad. And then I found out he had more than one pair of these, depending on which day of the week it was. And I even found out you can go online and buy these sneakers on an installment plan for about $180 to $200 a month over 24 to 36 months. Which had never occurred to me that you could do with sneakers. And so I'm pretty sure he wasn't getting involved with this out of poverty or out of a harsh background or anything like that. Another young man who was up to his ears in it, and I went to find out where his parents were to live to go talk to him. Well, they lived in a house that cost $500,000. I don't know what kind of payments they're making on it, but if you live in a house that costs $500,000, I don't want to hear about you doing what you're doing because of background and poverty. So that's a myth. And also, that's also a slander against people who are from a background in poverty and work hard to improve themselves or to live an upright life. I grew up with kids who were living in poverty when I was small, and when my dad was preaching, we had people there who were members of the church who lived in poverty, a lot more than any of these kids I was dealing with, who grew up to be good kids, good people, good adults as adults, because they were raised as to how to act and how to live. And so the amount of money you have one way or the other doesn't force you to live in any certain way. And in fact, sometimes having too much gets in the way of living as we ought to. But these kids... one thing I did notice, especially, kids from a wealthy background, and they want to act this way, if you ever want to see the pride of life, some of these kids who are from a wealthy background, have everything that they could even imagine, never told no on anything, but still want to be affiliated with a gang just for the purpose of having other kids be intimidated and find another reason to they think, look up to them. And it's the pride of life and this idea of something else to hold over other people. And it's whatever it is, it's never enough. And that would be one of the strongest things I've seen in that is this idea of pride. And this idea of if I affiliate myself with a certain group or a certain, then everybody will be afraid of me and I can hold that over other people. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if you turn over to the book of Proverbs with me for a second now, back to where we had the reading this evening, Proverbs 1, and since Benny already read this, I'm not going to read the entire thing, but there are a few things I'm going to pick out. Solomon here writing says, if sinners entice you, he says, my son, so this says a father to a son, if sinners entice you, consent not. That is, don't give in to what they invite you to do. And how do they tempt him? He says, we're going to lie in wait secretly for the innocent and to shed blood. So we're going to sneak around, do things in secret, do things in the dark, to kill people, to shed blood, and to steal. And see, this thing that people talk about as being maybe the gang lifestyle is nothing new. Solomon also said there's no new thing under the sun. This thing people talk about as a gang lifestyle is nothing new. All the way back here in the book of Proverbs, Solomon is talking about it. We'll lie in wait for innocent blood. The oldest gang, if you want to use the definition of a gang as is used by law enforcement in the state of Arkansas, anybody have an idea? That's still in around today, been around the longest. Anybody have an idea what the oldest one would be? It's not who you think. If you're using the law enforcement definition of a gang or gang activity, it goes back to 1865 or 1866 and the Ku Klux Klan. Now, that'd be the oldest gang that's been around in the state of Arkansas as far as here. There's no new thing under the sun. But even Solomon, thousands of years ago, talks about people who want to live the same lifestyle. Let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol. The word Sheol there means the grave or death or the pit. And it says, we will fill our houses with spoil. If we all get together and we engage in this criminal activity, we'll get rich. Now we're going to do it by killing the innocent, by stealing, by robbing, but we'll all get rich. Solomon says, they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So is the way of everyone who is greedy for gain. People who are greedy for gain and are never satisfied and are willing to do anything to get it, Solomon says that they're going to bring about their own destruction by doing it. They're lying in wait, he says, for their own lives. They bring about their own deaths. And a lot of people have, you know, this idea, and you, once again, I see this in the kids a lot, and especially in, you know, these teens that I deal with from day to day, that I can do whatever I want, and there'll never be any real consequences. Now, one of the reasons that they have that idea is because as they've grown up at home, they've done whatever they want, and there's been no consequences. Solomon admonished fathers, if you love your son, beat him while there's yet still hope. He admonished, and once again, the Hebrew writer tells us that God chastises those who he loves as a father chastises his son. And once again, that word chastise, people sometimes have the idea that chastise means I get onto you and talk to you real stern. That's not what the word chastise means. The word chastise, if you go back and you look at the root word, literally means to beat them with a stick or a whip. Now, that's what chastise literally means. A good whooping, as we'd say here. And so that's how he says a father treats a son whom he loves. Well, a lot of kids have been raised, and they grow up into young adulthood and then adulthood. You know, by the time they're 15, 16 year old, it's not right to call them just a child anymore. They're a young adult at that point. Now, I realize that they're not fully developed. They haven't fully got their heads on straight. But they're old enough to know right from wrong and to know what to do. And they should be treated that way. Turn over to Galatians chapter 6 for a moment. In Galatians chapter 6, verse Verse 7, Paul writes, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will the Spirit reap everlasting life." Now, one of the greatest harms that you can do to a child, to a young person, is not teach them this, that whatever you sow, you're going to reap. And well, how do you teach a young person that whatever you sow, you're going to reap? Well, it starts out at the home when they're very young. And it starts out when they do what they're not supposed to, the rear end gets worn out. And it continues on that the parents, not the schools, not the state, not the police, the parents had the primary, the first responsibility. Specifically, fathers are told, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that's the first responsibility of a father there. Bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And the first thing to do is to teach that each child, if you do what's wrong, there are consequences. And the more immediate and the more memorable those consequences are, the better they'll be remembered. I know, not my dad, but my mom as well, I was terrified when I was small and went to school. I was absolutely terrified of getting in trouble with my teacher, especially I remember in elementary school. The last padlin I ever got in school was in second grade. I never got another one after that. I was done with it. And it was not because I was afraid of my teacher. I wasn't actually. The padlin they gave me, I was not even a little bit afraid of that, because they had one of those little things, you know, those little paddles that you did with the bouncy ball, you know? And they pat, pat, pat you on the rear three times. I'd just laugh at that if that was all I was going to get. I didn't care a bit about that. But I was absolutely terrified to get it. The reason I was absolutely terrified to get it was, after they gave me those three little pats on the rear, they also sent a call home to my mom. And when I got home, she was already, I didn't even have to walk, she was already on the porch waiting for me. And she had a belt in her hand. Actually, that's if I was lucky, she had the belt. If I was unlucky, she'd gotten the racetrack instead. And, it was horrible. And then, it wasn't over then either. Then when my dad got home from work, then I got number three. And so I tell you, if you wanted the teachers to be the ones to do it, we'll do the best we can, but that's not really going to cover like it needs to be, because I wasn't scared of the teacher. What I was terrified of was the teacher calling mom and dad. And that put a memory there of immediately and instantly, I'm not going to do this again. And I got very quickly, if I reap trouble at school, if I sow trouble at school, I'm going to reap trouble at home. And the trouble at home is going to be exponentially worse than the trouble I sowed at school. That means about 10 times worse. And so I learned early on, I will not sow trouble at school because I don't want to reap it at home. Now, to the best of my knowledge, my parents never, I don't know, I say to the best of my knowledge, I'm sure of this, they never went to the school and explained to the teacher, it wasn't really my fault, I'd just fallen in with the wrong crowd. It's like, yeah, just call us next time and it'll happen again. That is what, if we're going to raise children who will do what they need to do, who will be the kind of adults they need to be, that's what our responsibility as parents is. Turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 for a moment, please. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Jesse's sitting there. He's got big eyes. He's trying to imagine Mamaw waiting for me with a belt there on the porch. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13, Solomon, the Ecclesiastes writer anyway, says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." Now, this is another thing about dealing with adolescents that you find early on, is they think they think they're getting away with something when actually what they're doing is painfully obvious to every adult around them. And, you know, kids, you know, and it's amusing to me sometimes at school, that kids think that they're actually being sneaky and getting away with something. It's like, okay, if I see you going down the hall doing this, I know whatever it is you're doing is not what you're supposed to be doing. It's, you can spot that. I mean, it is so obvious when they're up to something. You know when the kids are up, because they get the I'm up to something walk, and the up to something sit in the way that they sit in their seat. And it's just, and they think that we don't see what they're up to. But, you know, those of us who are adults may chuckle at that, but how many times have we done that same thing and think we're getting away with something behind God's back? And we think, oh, we're being so sneaky, he doesn't know what I'm up to. He's going to bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. We think it's secret. We think it's hidden. It's not hidden from God. And just like we may see the kid and think, really, do you honestly think we don't see what you're up to? God sees us. He knows even the innermost thoughts of our hearts. He knows what we're up to. He knows what we're thinking. Turn over to the book of James for a moment, please. And in James, I'd like to look at James chapter 1 and verse 13. James 1 and verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Now, once again, it's all too often I, you know, have to have the conference with the parent. Why is your child involved in this activity? Oh, well, he just doesn't know any better. I think he knows better. Oh, he just fell in with the wrong crowd. Well, he may be hanging out with the wrong crowd, but that was his choice. Nobody forced him to. Well, he just, you know, he just, and on and on and on, the list of excuses. Why do people do what's wrong? Each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. The young man who thinks it'll make him someone to be looked up to and feared and respected to wear gang colors is drawn aside for the same reason as anyone is drawn away for many sin. The kid who gets involved with drugs is drawn away for the same reason as anyone else. Any sin you can go through, everyone is drawn away for the same reason. It's because I wanted it. And I knew it was wrong, but it really looked like fun. And so even though I knew it was wrong, I did it anyway. Now that's why anyone is drawn away and enticed into sin. I've yet, in all the excuses that I ever hear, I will occasionally, very rarely, but occasionally have some parent tell me, my kid just didn't know any better on this. They didn't know what they were doing was wrong. And once again, I was like, no, they knew. He knew, she knew. They knew that this was wrong. By the time they get to be a teenager, if they have enough wits to be able to find their way inside the school and go around to the different classrooms on their own, they know these activities that they're getting involved in are wrong. They know they're not supposed to do it. If they didn't know that, they wouldn't be trying to be sneaking behind everybody's back to do it. People don't try and sneak behind other people's backs to do things that they think are right. But of all the excuses that you hear, I almost never hear a parent say, yep, they knew it was wrong, but they just decided to do it anyway. And I think probably the reason is, most of the kids that I have to get to have a serious intervention with, it's really a small number. And the majority of the kids who are not in trouble or are doing well in school, their parents know that they know right from wrong, and they've taught them, and that's the reason that they do what's right. The smaller group that causes a lot of trouble, they haven't been taught. They haven't had consequences at home. They haven't been made to learn and to obey. Now, when I say they haven't been made to learn and obey, I know with adults, we all have a choice. But with a child, they don't get a choice. Jesse knew he was coming here this evening whether he wanted to or not. Now, in all fairness to Jesse, he's good about it. That's not what I mean. There are several kids here this evening who knew that they didn't get a vote in whether or not they were coming to church tonight. Mom and Dad and Nana and Papa said, "You're coming," and that's all there is to it. There is no discussion. There's no debate. That's just how it is. And that's what children need. This is what's right. This is what's wrong. This is not a debate. I'm not engaged in debate club with children. This is what you're going to do. If you do something outside of what you're supposed to do, then you'll get your rear end worn out. And then you'll do it anyway, what I told you to do originally. And we can do that as many times as necessary until I get what I want out of you. Now, when they're still a child, there's still that opportunity. Solomon says, train up a child in the way he should go. When they're small, you still have that chance. Once they get to adulthood, that chance goes away. Now, you may still be able to reach someone with the gospel eventually, but not the same way that you can teach a child when they're young. There's that opportunity we have when they're still small. And if we lose that opportunity, if we miss that opportunity, if we don't take that opportunity, then we can lose that child. And they become one of those who, as Solomon talks about in Proverbs 1, they think it's a good idea to get involved with criminal activity, to take the easy way out in everything, to turn their back on the laws of God and man, and just do whatever they want to satisfy whatever desire they have. And that young man or young woman is lying in wait. They're going to destroy their own lives. They lie in wait for their own blood. That wraps up pretty much everything I had to say this evening. Now, that being said, if there's anyone here this evening who has not done what you need to do to be a Christian and you understand it and you need to do that, then you need to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. On the basis of that faith, you need to repent of your sin, put sin out of your life, and no longer serve sin, but serve God instead. Confess your faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God, and be baptized in water for the remission of sins. In doing that, you can have a new life in Christ. If there's someone here who's a Christian, but you've gone back into the world, back into sin, and need to make that right, you have the opportunity to make that right this evening by repenting that sin, confessing that sin, and praying for forgiveness, knowing that He is faithful and just to forgive us our sins if we confess them. If there's anyone here this evening we can help in this or any other way, we ask that you come forward now as we stand and sing.